Welcome to Better Relationships, Better Work, where we explore how to make work better through the power of relationships. My name's Jason Lauritsen. I'm the author of two books, a leadership trainer, and speaker on a mission to fix how we treat people at work. Now, in this episode, we cover a lot of ground, from discussing the power of feeling safe in a relationship to why it's important to extend others grace. But we also tackle one of the most complicated questions of any type of relationship, whether it's a work relationship, a personal relationship, or something in the middle. How do you know when it's time to move on? That is a juicy question, and I really dig into it with this week's guest, Jamie Griffin. Jamie is the founder and principal of Consult to Grow, a restaurant strategy firm that advises restaurant owners on scaling systems, processes, and people to grow sales, profits, and geography. Jamie helps growing restaurants and chains to clarify their visions, develop their strategies, build the right teams, and monitor their progress to get to the next level. Jamie is a longtime friend and an incredibly thoughtful guy, and he really delivered the goods in this conversation. So please enjoy Jamie Griffin. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, we're going to talk all things relationship today, of course. And so I think I warned you that I'm going to ask you a few questions so that we can get to know you a little better, your relational style. And so I'm curious about this one. I mean, you and I have known each other for a while, and I think I know the answer to this question, but I've been proven wrong that I often assume this wrong. So when you think about the introvert to extrovert kind of spectrum, where do you fit on that spectrum?
Yeah. Can I just say, like, for some reason, there's a lot of pressure when somebody says they want to talk about relationships and share it with the world. So I'm feeling that pressure, but I'm very excited about the conversation, and I'm passionate about the topic.
I'm glad you're here.
And this dovetails into my answer, which is most people know I'm an extrovert. I've really never struggled with making friends and going out and about and getting on a stage and doing all of those things. But a place where most people wouldn't realize that I have a lot of anxiety is that a place where I really go back to my introverted roots is when I'm in a space with a lot of new people that I don't know very well. I can easily have a lot of anxiety about that and go into a corner and just kind of hope I can blend into the wall.
So you got a little bit of both going on. So an extrovert with some introvert that pokes its head out once in a while in particular situations. I'm curious how that shapes, you know, when you self-identify, it sounds like, as an extrovert. How do you think that orientation towards extroversion, towards sort of being with people, working with people, getting energy from that, how does that impact how you show up in relationships or how you go about forming relationships, do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think in general, the world overvalues extroverts. So not to like take my stock down, but just in general, people sort of gravitate that extrovert is a positive thing and introvert is somehow not. When extroverts are together, it's great. When introverts are in the mix, I think we really have to work to connect with them and see their point of view and really solicit their feedback. One of my long-term bosses was an architect by trade and was entirely introverted. He made this joke once. He's an introvert. His kid is very extroverted. And he's like, I'm fine with him being an extrovert until it involves me. And he goes out and meets other people's parents that I then have to be an extrovert with. So I think we just have to know how to respect each other and be in relationship with each other and value each other with reciprocal amounts of care, meaning one's not better than the other. We both have gifts to offer. I think the other thing is, you know, I mentioned I have a lot of anxiety when I get into these spaces with new people. And I think that's really because my extrovertedness takes a backseat and my like desire to want to be liked and accepted and belong takes a front seat. And so I've sort of tried to use my extroverted superpower to flip that on its head. And when I go to events like that these days, I try to make sure somebody else feels like they belong and use that like skill of interacting with people and bringing people together to start relationships or to be a good reflection of the relationship that invited me into the room.
That makes sense to me, knowing you, that because you have this sort of superpower in like hospitality and caring for others, that when you take that, if when you have that to lean into, when your extroversion isn't necessarily what's leading the way, that's a pretty potent combination. So that's why I think you do find it easy to make friends and connect with people. So let me ask you this one. This is a question I have become really fascinated by for not only my own journey, but as I've been having these conversations, it's been so interesting. And that is, when you think back about your childhood growing up, what's something that you learned about relationships when you were growing up that still shapes how you think about or show up in relationships today?
Yeah, this is something I had to give a lot of thought to. And I don't want to be curt in any way, but I think that the way my parents raised me probably was more informative of what not to do in a relationship than what to do in a relationship. And I am happy for and envious of people who grew up in a situation where healthy relationships were role modeled. It just so happened that I had good parents who were well-meaning, who had very traumatic upbringings, and passed those along in their own weird way. And so, you know, the thing I took from my core relationships growing up was more about what to avoid doing and how I address what was passed on to me and not pass it along to other people. Really, really working on my relationship with myself because it became dysfunctional in the way I was raised, and really allowing me to be more empathic to other people who were sort of taking on multi-generational trauma within the way they approach relationships. And I 1000% believe that the way we were raised impacts the way we show up, not only the way we show up in relationships, but the relationships we choose to be in.
Well, I think thank you for sharing that. And it is true. Like that's, and I think it's fair and very honest to say like what we learn isn't always all positive. A lot of times we learn about, you know, we learn what we don't want and we learn how we don't want. And sometimes, it sounds like you've been on a journey to also sort of sort through all of that and what it means, and then sort of flip it to the other side of like, well, if that's what I'm not going to do, or if that's what I don't want, what does the opposite of that look like? And that's some real work, right? Getting through that and turning that into something positive is not easy.
Yeah, look, I think you nailed when you said flipping it over. I think you nailed that. I had to work on not running away from something, but to figure out what to run toward. And it's not exactly the opposite side of the coin, right? It's not like just the absence of, it's really defining what is a healthy relationship and running toward that and finding relationships that embrace that and inevitably going through some unhealthy relationships and learning from each one and growing from each one.
Mm. And that, you know, that's a really, I think a really important point that I think about a lot in the context of relationships and thinking about, you know, in the work of trying to help other people learn how to have healthier relationships at work, through work or and beyond, is there's a lot of us that you know, we don't naturally know what a healthy relationship looks like or feels like. I'm always surprised by when we have these conversations at work and we're talking about relationships or building relationships with the people that you lead, and we're talking about trust or we're talking about, you know, certain kinds of conversations or feedback. And it strikes me that this isn't a work issue. The reason that these people are struggling to show up in a positive relationship with this person at work, this person they're leading, or this person they're working with, is because they don't have those skills in their personal life, right? It's not there. They never learned it. It was never modeled. And they never did the work that it sounds like you've done to try to replace that absence of the modeling or the learning or the experience with something very intentional that they want and what they're trying to create. And so I think that's important work. And I appreciate you raising that up, because I think that's something, it's a blind spot for a lot of people.
Yeah. Look, and I will be the first to admit that I'm going to do that work for the rest of my life. At least it feels like I'm going to do that work. I don't feel done in any way, shape, or form. And as much as people who do have a healthy template are probably trying to figure out what's happening here, this person doesn't have the skills or the template. I really regret how I unpacked some of my trauma on other people, especially as a supervisor, a young supervisor. And so I think we've just got to give each other grace. I think we've got to meet people where they are. And I think awareness creates choice. And the more we're aware that we're all showing up to work with all these different backgrounds, and at the end of the day, everyone's imperfect, no matter their appreciation for relationship characteristics, communication, trust, respect, et cetera. We'd be better off. But I think we just go in blind going everybody's like me. Everybody's coming from this tack or that tack. And the truth is we're all very different, and that creates a lot of frustration for people.
Indeed. All right. So let's get into our exploration here. I gave you a little bit of homework. Think about two relationships. We'll start with a personal relationship, someone from your personal life who you feel you have a really healthy, strong, positive relationship with, so that we might learn from it. So let's start there. What relationship are we going to talk about today?
Jason, I'm going to break all of your rules because I'm not going to talk about one person. I'm going to talk about this group of friends, this core group of friends that I have in my life. It's two couples. It's me and two couples, my friends, Kristen and Jason, and then Russ and Mandy. Kristen and Russ are the core of my group. I've known Kristen since I was in kindergarten. We grew up together, two blocks apart from each other in a whole nother state. I'm now in Dallas, Texas. We live two doors down from each other, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And Russ and I met in college. So we kind of call ourselves the three amigos, essentially. And their spouses are included because we love them. But we tell the spouses pretty clearly, if there's ever a breakup of any kind, the three amigos are the three amigos. So when you asked this question, I knew the answer because I was with this group of people in New York probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember just being with them and going wherever you guys are is where I want to be. Like when we think about retirement, y'all tell me where we're moving. And that's where I'm going to retire to. We'll come up with an answer. And so I would say Kristen and Russ, and then their spouses, Jason and Mandy, are the people who I think of as the strongest and healthiest relationship in my life.
So what is it about those relationships, or about this group that you have? What is it that stands out? If you could describe what makes it so powerful or positive for you, what words would you put to it?
Yeah, I think going back to the idea of safety, when I'm in space with them, I can be 100% myself. The smart parts, the goofy parts, the funny parts, the not funny parts. We have different viewpoints about the world. We have different political beliefs. We have, different views on family and relationships. But no matter what, when we're together, it feels very safe. And I think we can all be ourselves. The second thing that I think is just incredibly unique about this relationship is its length in time. In both cases, though, 2 decades more for Kristen, because we met in kindergarten, and Russ and I and Kristen all kind of met in college. I've known these people for decades, and I think there's something to be said about time And the fact that there are ripples in every relationship, and our relationship has stood the test of that time. Russ and Mandy have kids, Kristen and Jason don't, I don't, like, there are all these differences. And yet still, when we come together, it's one unit. When we have disagreements, it's not that we don't have disagreements, it's just they're easy to work through, or like, we all know each other's quirks. And so we know how to relax each other or navigate around the quirks that we bring to a very complex dynamic.
So as you think about that, what things do you do in that sort of group that you think makes it work? That sort of, because great relationships don't just happen. There's, we're actively participating in doing things. So what is it, if you were to call out kind of some things that maybe you think are important to maintaining or growing or ensuring that those relationships work, what kinds of things would you highlight?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we're all graceful with each other. I think because we have such differences, we have some difference in geography, et cetera, we have to be graceful. I think we're always committed to communicating with each other. I think we're communicating regularly, and the level of communication varies. Sometimes it's just a couple of texts a week as a group, and other times, it's a huge amount of communication, or we're frequently traveling together. So being in community with each other is important for us. We're super excited to be planning a Labor Day vacation this year. And so some of our communication isn't, this serious over the top communication, but just a way to stay connected, or for the holidays, celebrating together, for birthdays. So they're just times we know we're going to be in community with each other. I think that allows us to look forward to that space. I also think we have zero resentment, at least, and this is probably a question for the group, and I'm going to ask it after today's conversation, but we have zero resentment about when we're unavailable to be in that community, meaning like sometimes I'm really busy, and sometimes, some of the other couples are really busy. And, no one holds a grudge about like lack of space. Everybody is understanding and kind. So look, communication, community are big words, and grace and safety are big words. Like, I always feel safe. It kind of always go like, who would you call if you got really in trouble? These are the people I would call, and I have nothing but confidence that they would have my back. And I think knowing that, in spite of maybe some differences, is a really beautiful thing to have. In a way, it feels like my chosen family. So that's even deeper of a level of relationship.
It's beautiful. It sounds amazing. As you think about this, the purpose in me asking you to reflect on this is to see what kind of lessons we can learn, things that maybe you have observed, practiced, learned, experienced over the years in this friendship that can be applied elsewhere, can be applied to how we build other relationships or how we show up in relationship with others. So is there a particular lesson that you think you've learned or that has really become important to you through your experience in this relationship that's helped you maybe build relationships with others?
Yeah. Probably like 100 things I've probably learned that if I had to focus on I'm going to focus on a few. Investing in each other matters materially. Investing time, investing words in communication. We wouldn't have this relationship if we weren't investing in each other. And so I think that's really material. I think it's nice to talk about this long-term friendship that I have with, Kristen and Jason and Russ and Mandy, but there's so many that weren't that long, right? Like, I think over-focusing on it, like, takes away from a lesson that you can be called away from relationships. Not every relationship is meant to be for life. Many, many, many relationships are just for a moment. I've been called to be in this one for a long time, but there are so many that served me for a moment, and then I realized were unhealthy or needed to change, or time just split us apart. And so I think it's also an important lesson to learn is really like, there's a place for a lot of different time span relationships or quality relationships And knowing the time and place for them is important, and not feeling like a sense of obligation to be in them. I feel no sense of obligation in this one. And I think I would look at that as like an orange or a red flag if I did. And commitment to safety, meaning like that space is created. I think we could easily offend that for each other if we weren't thoughtful. And we've had to work through it and communicate. But in every single case, we've decided it was worth it. And I think you have to decide that working through the complexity or differences is worth it. And that's where the growth happens.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Let's now talk about the work relationship I asked you to think about. This was a relationship sort of born out of work or born through work experience that has had an impact on you or your career. So what relationship are we going to talk about on this side of the equation?
Breaking the rules again, Jason. Instead of a relationship with a person, I'm going to just talk about my first relationship with work. So you and I are very aligned as friends that work is a relationship. And I'm one of these weird millennials. I'm a geriatric millennial, Jason. I'm like at the upper cusp. So that will date you. That will date me. I'm one of these rare geriatric millennials who's only had two jobs in their life. One job was for 14 and a half, 15 years with a company, which was a company I joined in college. And the other has been having my own consultancy. And so I really consider my work relationship with that company for 15 years to be one of the most significant relationships and like growth propellants in my life. And what's so fascinating about that relationship is that I believe this, like I believe that if you took the traits of your primary caregivers, drew a circle, and on the top of that circle, you put all the positive attributes of your primary caregivers as a kid. And on the bottom of that circle, you put all the negative attributes of your primary caregivers. That is who you're attracted to in life. When you meet those people or those organizations, because we can be in a relationship with the companies we work with, and we see the positive, we're like, God, this feels so natural. And we see the negative, we're like, oh my God, I feel like I'm just trying it at home, right? Like people go on first dates and are like, I feel like I've known you forever. When I got this job at this company, I felt like I knew them forever. And I didn't know, because I was 21 at the time, that that company was a perfect reflection of my childhood, the good and the bad. And in a weird way, more the bad than the good, because when you see the negative stuff, you're like, I've seen this before, I can deal with it. You know, I didn't have like a traumatic history with alcoholism or drug addiction, but like, if addictive behavior was in my past and I saw it in a relationship, I'd be very comfortable with it. Not because it's a good or bad thing. It's just because I was nurtured in it and I feel capable of handling it. And so this relationship, this long-term relationship, had all of that in it. And I worked over 14 years. Both I grew and the organization grew, both rapidly, by the way. In a way that forced each other to grow. I think the only way I could have stayed was to continue to mature. And ultimately, one of the reasons I left was because it was part of my maturity. And it was like, as I said earlier, it was being called away from a relationship that no longer felt like it was serving me. So that we can get really into detail on that because it's a big chunk of my life. But that is the most significant workplace relationship that has created a positive impact on my life, and why I got into it, and maybe a little bit of the story of why I got out of it.
This webcast is sponsored by my longtime friends at Inspiring Workplaces. Now, if you are someone who's working to create an engaging and inspiring workplace for your employees, and of course you are, that's why you're here, then listen up. Inspiring Workplaces is a global community of tens of thousands of HR and employee experience professionals that you can join for free. As a member, you will gain access to thousands of articles and videos and podcasts and events that will help you change the world by changing the world of work. They are also home to the Inspiring Workplaces Awards that recognize the best workplaces in the world. You can learn about the application process at their website. So please go visit inspiring-workplaces.com to learn more and to join the community. That's inspiring-workplaces.com. Well, I think I'm interested to dig in a little bit on this issue that you have raised now twice, which is relationships aren't all forever. Some of them come and go, and you leave a relationship when it doesn't serve you anymore, or it doesn't, you know, it's not serving or moving you forward, whatever that is. And it sounds like that's been both true for you in personal relationships. It's also true for you here in this work relationship. So I'm curious to maybe explore that, because I think this is something that often a lot of us struggle with, is when to sort of double down and work harder to make it work, and when to know, okay, this is it. It's time to move on. And so I guess it seems like you've thought about this quite a bit. You've been through it several times. So talk to me about that. Talk to me about how do you know, or how have you known at times when a relationship you think is running its course, when it's becoming near the end where you're going to part ways? What has that looked like for you, or how have you learned to recognize that?
So I think to talk about the end, you have to talk about the beginning. So just kind of flipping this back to you a little bit, what do you think calls you into a relationship? For you, when you think of some of the stronger relationships you've had, Jason, what's been the magnet? Like, how have you created this, like, oh yeah, this is something I should be a part of?
It's a good question. And I don't know that I have a satisfying, answer for that, because I think that one of the things I talk about often is, and have for a long time, is that I think we're often very romantic about our hindsight relative to relationships and why we chose certain people and why we were drawn into certain things. And the research suggests that we become closest with the people we do stuff with, and that we create this overlap with, and that's how it happens often. The more interesting question is the people that I end up sticking with for a while tends to be because we have some kind of shared interest or shared values or shared purpose or shared curiosity or whatever. We're trying to do something similar, go someplace similar. So that's probably my best answer to that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I would say it very similar, so I'll use my own words. I already talked about the sense that we look for people that have the positive and negative traits of our nurturement, of how we were nurtured, and those people feel really comfortable. The second thing we're looking for is people who are like patterns that are compatible to our patterns. They're the same age. They also have kids this age, right? So to your point about it's like, people we're spending time with them because there's things we have in common with them. There's pattern, like our career is at the same trajectory, or, you know, we're at this point in our life where we're both seriously looking for that relationship, you know, a passionate relationship, whatever it is. And so we come together because there are patterns that bring us together. And I think a good relationship forces us to grow, meaning now we become a reflection. So if I looked for you for the reasons of my nurturement, you looked for me because of the reasons of your nurturment, and we have these patterns in common, I think that as long as those patterns are in common and we grow together, we're going to be in a healthy relationship. I think there are a couple of places where I think there are different reasons why we get called away from relationships. An easy one is the patterns aren't aligned anymore. Like, we were friends, are in relationship because our kids went to the same school, but now I live on the other side of town and my kids has other friends, right? It could be that simple. Or, you know, I thought you were looking for this, or we had this in common, but your life has changed because I'm single, you got married, right? So if the patterns change, that's a reason why we would fall out. Another reason we'd be called out or called away from the relationship is if the growth is very different. Like, I'm in it to grow and we're all here to make constant progression, and I make this kind of progression and you don't make any progression, then all of a sudden I'm unfulfilled by my relationship with you, right? And you're probably unfulfilled by your relationship with me. And so if one or the other party grows too much, we will fall out of alignment. And then the last thing that I'm always really considerate of, especially because of the of my life experiences, is I think a healthy relationship is like leaning on each other, right? So sometimes you need a little more support, sometimes I need a little bit more support. But ultimately, as we're leaning on each other, we're like stronger together and we can stand on our own. And I think the hardest relationships to get out of are the ones where people are toppling you over. Like, they're not reciprocal. They're asking too much. They're putting something on you you can't handle. I think those are really, well, they're really hard for me because I feel like I'm like abandoning somebody. But in reality, I have somebody who's getting like asking something from me I can't give. And they're going to be dissatisfied with how I respond to that anyway. So that would be an example of, now I'm in an unhealthy situation because of my compatibilities. I thought I could help you with this problem you have, but I don't have the capacity to do that.
Well, there's a couple, I guess there's a, I think I want to call out what I think are a couple of probably assumptions or things that I think you probably believe to be true that are within how you think about this, that I just want to call out because I think it's helpful for people to understand this. One is that there's a valuing of, regardless of how short or long the relationship is, it's not the longevity of the relationship that makes it meaningful. It's the experience that you have in any given moment with that person. It's right, the exchanges you have along the way. So just because you and I, you know, like I think about those people that, you ever have that where you like, you meet somebody at a conference and you happen to sit next to each other and it's like kindred spirits. And like, you're going to be like for 2 days or 3 days, you're kind of going to all the same stuff and you're grabbing, you know, you're hanging out at the happy hours and you got all the stuff in common. It's like your BFFs for 2 days or 3 days. And then you go back home and like, it's just, it's over. It's this weird moment in time. And it's easy. I think a lot of people place like project some kind of guilt, or they have some kind of guilt, or they feel some kind of responsibility to the longevity of any given relationship. I see this all the time that it's like, oh, well, we were only together for this period of time. It's like, well, those 2.5 days were awesome. This person was great. That was really meaningful. Just because we don't go back and become best friends after that doesn't mean that those 2.5 days weren't pretty awesome, or those 2 years or the 10 years that we were friends, but then our lives took us in different ways and we just didn't stay in touch. That doesn't mean those 10 years didn't mean something. And so there's just, the value is in the time and how you spend that time and what you get out of it. And you don't need to feel guilty on the back end of it. Or there's sort of this guilt about any relate, like, and I don't know where it comes from exactly, but that we feel like we have to maintain every relationship we've ever had. And it's like, sometimes the best thing to do is you have to prioritize yourself and believe in yourself and what's good for you, and recognize that this relationship has run its course, right? We're going to go different paths. And that doesn't mean the past wasn't valuable, but it just means the future is going to be different. And so I'm assuming you agree with those things in terms of how you're filtering through this as well.
I absolutely agree. Both that duration is not a marker of quality. And being called away from a relationship isn't a marker of failure in any way, shape, or form. I mean, to the story you're saying about I had a conference wife when I worked in an industry, and every conference we would hang out and love her. I still love her. Do I see her? No, I don't. But do I still think about her? Yes. Do I feel any guilt about it? No. I think what we gave each other was safety in those moments. We probably both felt very comfortable that being in a room of a bunch of people we didn't know wasn't super safe or anxiety free. And so that pairing allowed us to navigate that space together. And I think it's really beautiful. Same. I have this story from the last 12 months where I did a facilitation, a very tough facilitation for a variety of reasons, just life happening in the midst of this facilitation. And I got on a plane heading back from the city I was doing the facilitation in, exhausted, did not want to have a conversation with someone on the plane. It's the last thing I wanted to do. But the lady sat next to me and we started a conversation, and somehow 3.5 hours later, we had talked the entire flight. And she shared a lot about her life in a way. And one of the things she shared that she had lost a son my age. And I think the only reason I was there was to give her a hug at the end of that flight, you know, to have that conversation, because she was leaving the city, an apartment where he was, and to give her a hug at the end of the flight. And I feel no regret that we don't still have this like amazing relationship. I feel like we had the relationship God wanted us to have for the time we had it. And that was just a moment, you know, some are really long and some are really short. And same, right? If we go back to this analogy that we're supposed to grow and patterns, whatever, and one person outgrows the other person, and then I break away, what I'm really doing is freeing you, because you're holding a space for me as your friend, because you can only have so many of them, right? I'm really freeing you to go find somebody who's here and can grow with you, or will grow at the pace you want to grow, right? And if I stayed and resented you for not growing, then that's not a relationship either, right? Like being resentful of the person because you figured some things out that they're just still working on, not fair. So I guess the closing comment I would say on like not feeling bad about being called away from them is open up the space. They're just, you only have so many spaces for close relationships or deep relationships. And if you're holding somebody in that space, like especially in a passionate relationship, if I want something from you can't give me, and I'm holding a space like you're going to fill it, I'm doing us both a disservice. So just, I've got to let you go to open up the space for something new to come in that's going to allow me to have the experience I want, and let you get rid of the guilt of not being who I needed you or wanted you to be, and you couldn't do that.
So let's bring this home by maybe pulling a few of these threads back into the workplace and the work experience. There's a couple of things that we've talked about that I think are really powerful and relevant and interesting lessons to pull back. I think one is the thing that we've just been talking about, which is work is a relationship for employees, particularly in your industry, right? The restaurant industry is like, it's probably a short-term relationship for a lot of people. And so recognizing that, and just because it's short-term, just because you may not be here for a long time, doesn't mean that it's not a meaningful relationship or can't be a valuable relationship. And so I'm curious how, like when you are working with clients, or when you're thinking about advising sort of the restaurant workplace around how they're showing up with this sort of this work that's this constantly kind of ebbing and flowing workplace of people coming in and out, how do you advise them to show up? Like, what does it look like as a leader or manager to embrace the fact that we don't know how long that relationship is, and the relationship doesn't necessarily have to be a long one to be a positive, healthy, productive one?
Yeah. Look, I think we probably could chat for like 3 hours about some of these concepts or ideas, but the first thing is we don't get to choose how they show up. So look, in the hospitality industry, Jason, we really don't get to ignore that people have like personal things going on. I think in the corporate world, we pretend like everybody shows up healthy, they're checked their baggage at the door, you know, everybody's going to come and follow the agenda and do the talking points. But the reality is people are exhausted on that. We see it in the satirical humor and social media with people like corporate Aaron and some of these other people just mocking how unaware we are of the humans who are coming into work. I think sort of the reality of the restaurant industry is that we work so closely with each other, and we're working at times like weekends, weeknights, et cetera, where people's issues show up pretty quick. And so I think the industry has had to adjust to helping people with mental health, substance abuse, and some of those things that corporate environments are struggling a little bit more. All that being said, I think the restaurant workforce is growing faster than the employer workforce, meaning they're getting clear about their mental health. They're getting clear about their personal needs. I think COVID was an inflection point, but I think they were on trend to be smarter about what they need. I mean, we've changed a lot, but I think the employers are behind. When we talk about that analogy, I think the employers are like figuring things out that the employees are having to adapt to rapidly. Mental health is a huge one. And so, look, I think we have to, if we go back to the conversation we've had, I think we have to not topple each other over. Like, number one, like, it's a reciprocal relationship. We've got to give back and forth. Number two, we have to appreciate how people are showing up, and we can't like pretend they don't have some other life out there that's not going to impact how they provide customer service and how safe they are in the back of house of a restaurant, right? And number three, we've got to grow. Like, I'm challenging the restaurant industry, and we can't do it fast enough that going back to the old ways of doing things are not changing the way we employ people when we employ millions of people is a problem. We have to grow with the people. We have to get ahead of where they are. And instead of pretending like mental health doesn't exist, we have to be great at it. Like, by example, I have this amazing client in the Carolinas. They have 25 restaurants and they have a chaplain service. So that chaplain service, it will counsel to believers and non-believers, will show up in the restaurant and help people work out their complicated life issues in a way that takes that burden off restaurant managers who are totally unprepared to help with it, but also addresses that people are living in their cars, people are having issues with substance abuse and other things. So look, I just think we have to be really realistic, and I think we all have to grow together is what I would say.
I think that's a great way to wrap up. Jamie, you always have such thoughtful, deep perspective on things. That's why I was so grateful that you said yes to having this conversation. I appreciate you being here. Thanks for sharing your experience with us.
Thanks for starting the conversation so many years ago and for being an inspiration to me and for pushing me to think differently. I think the reason we have a good relationship is because you constantly challenge the way I'm thinking about the world of work. And I think together, I hope these conversations make it better. I can't wait to listen to the other conversations that you've had.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode. More importantly, I hope you learned something from the episode that can help you right away. Now, if you'd like to reflect on what you can learn from your own healthy, positive relationships to make work better, I've included a link in the description below where you can access and download what I call the relationship reflection exercise. This includes the same questions that I ask each of my guests to reflect on prior to our conversation on the webcast. Also, if you found today's episode valuable, I'd ask three quick favors of you. Number one, please like the episode. By liking the video and adding a comment if something spoke to you or stood out to you as really significant, you give me some great and valuable feedback, but you also help others find the video. I'd also ask you to subscribe to the channel. That does two important things. One, it makes sure that you won't miss any upcoming episodes, and it sends me the message that you like the kind of content that I'm creating here. And finally, please share this video with someone who you think might benefit. What better gift can you give someone than the gift of better relationships and a better work experience? I'm really grateful that you were here today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.